All right, I hope you're ready to lose an hour of sleep. Twice a year we have this debate about whether daylight saving time is really necessary. It hits some people harder than others, but as we roll into spring, we're going to roll back the clocks on the 10th. And for some people, it's a heck of an event. They're late for church, or they get all screwed up for the entire week. Some people just don't operate well if they get outside their schedule. I know I'm one of them, but I'll just wake up at a different time on the clock, and I'll have to reset the microwave and go through all the different appliances to make sure they're right. But to give us some insight on how this really affects people, we're lucky enough to be joined by Dr. Kathleen Yaremchuk from Henry Ford Health Sleep Disorders Center. I hope that was a mouthful. Kathleen, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Kathleen, is this really these two events every year, are they really a thing that people look at as something that's disruptive, or is it just kind of time to talk about it because you do sleep and everyone's sleep is a touch affected twice a year?
It's a big deal, and it's a big deal for a lot of reasons. And if you want to just look at numbers, the number of car accidents, motor vehicle accidents, increase 6%. The week after daylight savings time, because basically what we're doing is we're taking an hour of sleep away from everyone. And since we are in a sleep deprived culture as it is, taking another hour puts us all at risk for not having the vigilance we need in driving and working, and being a little bit grumpy as well at home.
Sure. I know this it sounds like antagonistic from me, and I don't mean it to sound that way. But if we see an increase of 6% in motor vehicle accidents, for example, do we see a decrease earlier in the year or later in the year, rather, when the clock rolls back?
There is actually some evidence that the safety, the baseline does go down some. The problem for many of us, though, is that it takes at least a week to adjust, either at tracking time. And we can talk about our body clock, which is what time does the sun go up and what time does the sun go down. And then the other part of it is your social clock. People expect you to be coming for dinner at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, but your internal clock tells you it's 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that is interesting. And you're obviously in the sleep business, right? If we were out somewhere and I said, "What do you do?" You said, I do sleep, or I am a doctor of sleep. Or do we severely, as human beings at this point, with all the technology we have and all the data points that could be accessed, do we underestimate the importance of sleep in general?
I think people are just starting to notice how important it is. For a while we've talked about, eating right and making sure that we hydrate correctly and that we stay away from sugars. And I think the third part of that now is recognizing how important sleep is to all of us and that you can undersleep or insufficient sleep will wreak havoc on our daily activities and our performance. And we talk about adults, but this is really much more important for our teenagers. And so listeners who have teenagers at home, we talk about adults needing 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Teenagers need 9 to 10 hours of sleep. And yet they're getting up and going to school at 7 a.m. and they are burning the midnight oil studying or going to sports practices. So all of us need to be very aware, very cognizant of what insufficient sleep leads to.
Yeah, Kathleen, as it pertains to daylight savings time in particular, are there a few very generic, easy, simple things that folks could do to help themselves adjust quicker? Is it perhaps, going to bed a touch earlier the prior night, staying, not getting in the car at the crack of dawn, whatever it might be? I mean, what are the lowest hanging fruit for this specific instance?
You hit on almost all of them. And so one of them is, you're right, you can't adjust an hour overnight. So Saturday night when you go to bed and all of a sudden you wake up Sunday morning, your body is not going to be adjusted. So usually the most we can adjust is about 15 minutes a night. So if you're normally going to bed at 10, tonight it should be 9:45, tomorrow 9:30, 9:15, 9 o'clock, so that you don't get that big 1 hour deficit at one time. And I kind of mentioned the idea of a body clock and a social clock, but every body has that circadian rhythm. And so delaying your dinner an hour and then going to sleep, you may not have finished your digestion. And so moving your meals up, moving your sleep time up, and trying not to have distractions in the bedroom at night when you do go to sleep. So put that phone away, stop texting, stop looking at emails, and prepare for a night's rest.
Yeah, Kathleen, this is tangential to this conversation, but I go back and forth to Arizona and California quite a bit. And with a 2 and 3 hour time change, I often find myself almost wanting to pull an all-nighter the first night that I get there, so that I'm so darn tired by the second day I actually can go to bed on time, which for me is relatively early because I'm such an early riser. Is that a bad idea for people? Should you just, if you go through a time change of any kind, should you just do your best to stay on schedule? And if you get shortchanged one night, that circadian clock, it kind of revolves itself back into rhythm, and then eventually you just fall into a good deep slumber and get that 7 or 8 hours back?
It's possible. And so I think you're talking about one-offs as opposed to chronically being sleep deprived. So for individuals that chronically get 5 to 6 hours of sleep, they're going to pay the price for it. If you do it once or twice a month or something like that, you can probably do well and not have a problem.
Right.
It's important to the minute the sun is probably the strongest driver of our circadian rhythm. And sometimes we can augment it. And one of the things we can do is the proverbial cup of coffee in the morning or some caffeine, as well as some exercise. And so you get the adrenaline, you get the caffeine, and you have your circadian rhythm with the sunshine, and you'll be in much better shape than trying to drive all of those systems without any help at all.
Yeah. On that note, what are some of the, again, the lowest hanging fruit for people who are looking for better sleep? I tell people oftentimes that the chili pad concept, you know, temperature control, saved me when it came to sleep. I was sleeping way too hot. I sleep much, much better when I'm cooler. Is there anything else like that that you could just throw out there for people who maybe just have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep that is a relatively easy, cheap fix?
Well, I'm going to suggest, much like you said, a cool bedroom is much easier. The other thing that helps is to make sure that it is dark and no distractions. And there are many people that fall asleep with the TV on. And the thing is, you really are listening to that. Subconsciously, you're listening to it. And we've all seen where you walk into the room, shut off the TV, and the person wakes up and says, "I was watching that." They may have been snoring, they may have been sleeping, but they're in a very light sleep as opposed to a deep sleep. Cool bedroom, dark, no extraneous electronics, texting, don't be looking at the clock, no TV running in the background. White is a fan is probably fine because you're not really concentrating on it. And recognizing that really what you need to focus on is not so much what time you go to bed, but what time you wake up. We need between 7 and 8 hours of sleep a night. So if you need to get up at 7, that means you need to be in bed by 11 to get that sleep.
Yeah, Kathleen, as we close out this segment, and again, thanks for coming on. This is interesting stuff in general. Much now has been peer-reviewed and printed and available on the effects of sleep regularity, sleep duration, and longevity. Do you feel that more people really should know what the long-term effects of their sleep patterns will be on their longevity?
I think that is so important. And you may have heard the saying, you know, when I'm dead, I'll have plenty of time to sleep. And the point is, if you're not sleeping, you may reach that endpoint a little bit earlier. So less than 6 hours of sleep a night, six or less, you're less likely to burn calories. You're more likely to have high blood pressure, more likely to have poor glycemic control, be diabetic. And so individuals who pride themselves on that 6 hours or less are doing some damage that is going to be long-term for them.
Good. Kathleen Yaremchuk from Henry Ford Health System Sleep Disorder Center, thanks for joining the program as we get ready to turn the clocks ahead on March 10th. Interesting stuff. Let's check in with Chris Renwick when we get back.